You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Welcome to M Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Now, your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan.
Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And I've got disappearing email disorder, but Mike, if you'll send me the talking points again, we can talk about it.
Okay, well, let's start off with Bob Moore. We both know Bob. Bob was working with one of my business partners, Kate O'Hara, and I. And brought him on about a month and a half ago before all hell broke loose in the pandemic world, where we were talking about financing for CBD companies and cannabis companies and things like that. Well, Bob can essentially, it doesn't have to be CBD or cannabis, right, Bob? You can essentially finance any type of company in certain ways.
Hello, gentlemen. Yes, I'm Bob Moore. I've been doing commercial financing for 40 years. And a matter of fact, since I have talked to you last week, we processed over $1 million worth of applications for CBD business owners.
Wow.
But in today's market, everybody is needing capital, and if you've got an order for hand sanitizers or face masks or something like that, you've got purchase orders from state governments or county governments or county schools or such. We've been helping businesses get them some money on the purchase orders so they can fill the orders.
All right. So how does this process start? Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, factoring has been around for centuries, actually. Counselor receivable financing. And it's like, okay, another part of that is contracting financing, or in this case, purchase order financing, which is could be a one-time deal, could be multiple times. But where businesses get orders, they don't have enough money to fill them. You know, a lot of times they're making a widget type deal. In this case, they're filling an order. They're filling a face mask or hand sanitizers. That seems to be the two things that are in the news anyway. But there's lots of things that's going on other than COVID-19.
So what? Well, I mean, they're certainly dominating the headlines and dominating everything that we're covering right now. As you know, we're working with different folks right now that are developing personal protective equipment. What you mentioned is face masks, shields, sanitizers, gosh, a whole bunch of stuff. And I know we've been sending a lot of folks your way. Has that been the dominant part of what people are reaching out to you for, or are they other things as well?
That's the dominant thing that we're getting emails and phone calls about. Actually, we're still getting a lot of things, just truckers, just regular businesses that's up and going. People that are selling furniture, you know, to restaurants. Believe it or not, there's still restaurants that are opening. They're changing up their formula and going to like a 4-squad deal instead of everybody lined up in a row and with a bunch of booths type thing. So we may see a lot of restaurants where people are back to back to each other type deal.
Interesting.
Yeah. What I'm hearing in other countries, for instance, where they have begun to open is that and this is probably not good news for restaurants, is they take out about half the tables so you can still do the social distancing. And I know, having worked in the restaurant business, that you got to have at least 50% occupancy or you're just to break even. So it's going to be a very challenging time for restaurants going forward.
Yes. But I think what's going to happen is all these restaurants are the ones that are set up beforehand where they were doing 10%, maybe 5% carry out business. Now they're doing 100% carryout business. They think that those restaurants think they're going to continue doing a huge amount of takeout business, and they probably will. I think a lot of people are cabin fever right now. So I think President Trump's saying the economy is going to boom. It probably will, because people are tired of staying in.
Ain't that the truth? Yeah. So you also do a purchase order. You do invoicing, factoring, that sort of thing. So, I mean, lots of different ways that people can work with you, right?
Yes, we do equipment financing. So you have invoice factoring, and you got purchase order financing and equipment financing. And then we do very large commercial loans from $1 million up.
Okay. And you even work with land purchases, if I recall, right?
Yes. Matter of fact, we've got several of pending deals where the CBD business owners is trying to buy more land.
Hmm. And so tell me a little bit about the work you do with truckers. I think they're among the sort of unsung or less than loudly sung heroes of this whole situation we find ourselves in right now.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting because they've relaxed some all these rules on these truckers that were they're probably not. This is one time where they could probably go 100 miles an hour and never get stopped. On stuff. They've been told to leave them alone and don't check the logbook and stuff like that. But on a trucking program, it's pretty neat because truckers are notorious for not keeping good books on the deal. But if you get an invoice for, let's say, for $10,000, we'll advance you 95% of it. Normally, for advance percentage is about 80%. On truckers, it's 95%. And then they also have a card where the truckers can fill up fuel on the fuel card, and it will take care of that. It will offset the fuel card amount, and the truckers just keep running. So it's kind of a neat deal if you're a trucker, because you don't want to stop to do books. You just want to keep rolling and making some money.
Well, and the highways are pretty wide open right now. I mean, I don't get out much except to buy groceries, but when I do, there's hardly any cars on the road. So
at the moment, there's very little cars. Matter of fact, on the ag side of it, it's kind of the fuel sales are dropped off so much, the ethanol, and the ethanol plants make a CO2 product that the meat companies use. They use the CO2 product that the ethanol plants make. So we may have a CO2 shortage.
Interesting. Okay. And in terms of, getting back to the personal protective equipment, now, you know, someone wants to book an order. A lot of this is still coming from overseas, and overseas wants at least 50% down, sometimes more than that. How are you dealing with that situation?
Basically, our process hasn't changed, and the rules on clearing hasn't changed. A lot of them want 50% down. You got to do a clearinghouse type deal, bill of lading, and they'll have a confirmation number, and you got to show that you've got ability to pay, which that's what we provide for the companies, the ability for them to pay for the goods, and then they have to provide the bill of lading that it's in the process of being shipped here, and so from there it goes to a clearinghouse. There's a number of different ways to clear the merchandise to verify it and that it's here.
So in terms of business, you're probably busier than ever then, right?
We are as busy as ever. We really are. It's kind of you don't wish anything bad, but we're busy as all get out. And so are lots of banks are busy. Matter of fact, you can't get a loan right now because all the banks are doing the PPP program.
Right.
And so they've got people called in that they haven't seen in, you know, that they've got tellers doing PPP programs and paperwork and stuff like that.
Yeah, it is strange times, that's for sure.
Yes.
So how did you get into this business anyway? Did you start out as a banker or a bank officer?
Yes, I started out. I'm third generation banker. My dad, my grandfather, and my father were both bankers. Insurance agent, real estate agent. By the time I was 18, so I had those licenses, had my stockbroker license at 25. So, and just kept working in bank. And so I had good opportunities to work around people ask me, how do you get so smart? And it's like, I was around a bunch of smart guys. I don't know if I'm smart, but I was around a lot of smart old bankers. And that was really the key to it. I was around the Kemper family in Kansas City and spent a lot of time in the banking in the Commerce Bank and United Missouri Bank, both there in Kansas City. So I ended up around a lot of smart people.
Okay. We've only got about a minute left, Bob. So why don't you tell folks how they can reach out to you to see if they can work with you to help them get financing?
Bob Moore Financing. And I'm also at invoicestocash.com. So either webpage will get me. 580-695-0331, BobMoreFinancing.com. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thanks very much, Bob. We'll appreciate it. Probably get you back on the show here in a couple more months. Hopefully things will calm down on the pandemic front, right?
Okay. Thank you, gentlemen.
All right. So we'll be right back with another segment right now. This is Mike Brennan.
And Matt Roush.
And you're watching MI Tech TV.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is more than a school. It's a launchpad for your future, offering industry-leading facilities and 100-plus programs that are ranked among the nation's best. Be unstoppable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
I'm Mike over here.
Okay. Hey, it's Matt Roush.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast. We're talking today about issues related to the coronavirus pandemic, which is sort of dominating the headlines these days. And we've got a couple of gentlemen here who are answering the call, among other things, for personal protective equipment. So, Mike, why don't you ask the first question?
Yeah, we have a father and son team here, Darren and Dalton. How do I pronounce your last name?
Ludke.
Ludke, okay. Because I wrote it down wrong. then I didn't want to mess it up, right? So,
no problem.
Yes. So you guys are actually developing the 3D products. And I believe it's 3D masks, right?
Well, it's actually three different products. We started off with the face shields and then moved over to the face mask alternative with using products from that we could source locally here. And then we also have what we're calling surgical mask ear savers to bring the tension off of the back of the mask that the doctors and nurses are making. And this is all a result of people asking and saying that, you know, the need basically is just incredible out there right now.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did you decide? Well, I think it was your son that's really heavily involved in that, right? That would be Dalton.
Yeah, exactly. Dalton, if you'd talk about the face shield, please.
Yeah, so basically this all started off by the 3D printer company that all of our printers are actually from. Their name is Prusa. They're based out of Prague, and they developed these face shields, basically. They're splatter guards that doctors wear to protect droplets of water or whatever from getting into their eyes. Well, they saw that there is a shortage of this all around the world, so they developed their own free model to download and actually produce, which is this right here. And so I saw that online, and I saw that a lot of people were asking for these, and there is actually a company out in California called Operation Shields Up. that was asking for donation of 3D printed parts for these shields. And so from there, we just saw that there is demand for all sorts of personal protective equipment, and starting with the shields, and then we moved to the masks, which she can talk about a little bit.
Well, yeah,
talk about your company a little bit of background on the company, when it was formed, and sort of what it does during more normal times.
Sure. So the name of the company is Dervosity LLC. It's a home-based business. And actually, once again, I got to point to my son. He's the brains of the operation. Started when he was about 10, 11 years old. He started teaching himself how to do some Java programming because he liked the game called Minecraft so much, and he wanted to build upon that. So that kind of propelled us a little bit into saying, you know what, why don't we try to play around with this a little bit? He got into smart home technology, and he made me talk to all my stuff in my house when he was about 13 years old. And then after that, he started getting into 3D modeling about, 3 years ago?
Two, 3 years ago. The high school I go to, Sequoia High School, actually offered a course where you could learn not only like being able to draw schematics and building plans and things like that, but also the 3D modeling aspect of it too. So I learned just basically how to design and model anything from there.
So basically started with a Christmas gift of a printer, and it's propelled us up into where we're at now on something that we never imagined we'd do. We have no medical background. We're just trying to a call to arms, basically, to help everybody.
And I believe, Dalton, that you're talking to other high school students about doing something similar with their printers, 3D printers, that sort of thing, right?
Yeah, well, all around the country right now, basically, there's all sorts of different groups that are set up that are just asking for people to donate 3D printed parts. These are things that you can, if you just look in your local area, there's probably some kind of group that is looking to accept parts. And like, for instance, we've been accepting some parts from some of my friends. Like my next door neighbor has a printer and he knows how to 3D print, so he's been able to produce a few. But yeah, people like all around the country have been able to donate these parts to these various groups and organizations, have been able to put them together and get them to the people that need them.
Interesting.
So how long does it take on a home printer to make something like this?
So about, we do about three, anywhere from 3 to 4 masks at a time per printer. And that entire print is about anywhere from 13 to 16 hours to do those 4 masks. So it's around, you know, anywhere from like 4 to 6 hours per mask, you'd say, to produce one of these.
And you'll see in the background, I don't know how well people can see, but we've got a print going on right now of these, which is the frame for the face shields. And they come out basically very together, and you just start breaking them apart once the print is done. And they'll come apart very quickly. Well, typically, if I'm not on camera, they come apart very quickly. And then you end up with 2 of them. So like he said, about 16 hours, and we end up with 4 shield frames.
And the neat thing you could do with 3D printers that is much harder to do, or sometimes impossible to do with plastic injection molding, is that you can do cavities and weird adjacencies and stuff like that, with a 3D printer, because there could be gaps in the bottle, right?
Yeah, so that's really why this type of technology is important right now, because 3D printers are basically creating a stopgap for when we can actually produce injection molded parts. That's like Operation Shields Up, which is in California. That's their whole mission, is 3D printers can produce a product virtually instantly. As long as you design it, you can print it in a matter of normally less than a day, whereas injection molding requires lots of testing and it requires lots of expensive equipment. It takes a lot longer to bring a product to market, whereas 3D printing you can have it immediately. And that's exactly what it's being used for right now.
All right. So how many of these have you made so far? I mean, you've been doing this for a couple of weeks now?
Yeah, it's been about 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks. So a big part of it was sourcing the materials. And these ones here were, I'll say, the easy ones. It was just a matter of getting the filament, which we already had here. We did put a big order in, waiting for the filament to arrive from the Czech Republic. So these we've done, I think we're over 100, 150 of them. We've shipped out quite a few over to California, but now we've stopped moving them to California because we're getting contacted directly. And we're doing free shipment, 100%. This is by donation. It's going out across the country, different places. The one that took a while, though, is These are the masks, the breathing masks, basically. And we print the green and the red part. There was a source for this rubber material that actually came out of Michigan. I believe it's Silex, I believe, is the name of the company. I don't remember exactly, but they made this here specific for this mask. That the actual design of this mask was done by a Dr. Mark Causey, who is a dentist over in Cumming, Georgia. And this is how we tripped upon this, is he had this mask design, and then Dalton has the brains to take that design and turn it into what we did here. So this mask here is about a 3 to 4 hour mask. Then there's the assembly of the rubber. These are hair bands that came from, that a girl would wear. Then what we do is you've got to put a filter of some sort on here. And that's the biggest problem right now, is what is safe? What's the best filter? This is where our non-medical, non-FDA approved statement comes out, is we sourced what we believe, based on all of our documents and what we've read, is going to keep people safer than if they had just a cloth mask on their face. So on the mask part, I'm sorry, Matt, on the mask part, we're up to about 250 to 350, somewhere in that range, that we've shipped out to about 12 to 15 different states right now.
Go ahead.
I was just going to ask, how are you reaching out to people to request these, or are people coming to you because the word's getting out now?
Sure. It's through Facebook, through the Derbocity Facebook page, and it's at Derbocity, D-E-R-B-O-C-I-T-Y. And at first we were doing this out of Hyde, quite honestly, but we kept getting asked, can we please donate? Can we please donate? And this is where I got to the point of, I think everybody wants to help in their own way. And so we opened up a donation page, and I'm just absolutely blown away at the love and the support that has been streaming in from all over the country. And that has kept this operation going. And when I say 24/7, I kid you not, the hair standing up on end and getting up at 2 a.m, swapping out filament has been going on for a solid 3 weeks now, or four.
We should probably point out, Darren, that you have a Michigan connection, right?
Oh, absolutely. So I retired from the Air Force, actually Air National Guard, up at Alpena Combat Readiness Training Center, just north of you guys by about 4 hours. And as a matter of fact, Dalton was born in the Alpena Hospital. So, and my wife, she is from East Lansing area, actually Mason, and she graduated from CMU. So we've got a strong tie back to Michigan.
And you're now living near Atlanta, just outside of Atlanta, right?
Correct. Yeah, we're in the one of the metro counties north of Atlanta right now. And I retired out of the Air Force about 15 years ago. And by day, I'm the CEO for a tech company, a software programming company. So this is, I'll say, the by night Dalton's baby that I've partnered up with.
Yeah. And of course, Dalton was saying he wanted to hopefully go to Georgia Tech and use his skills there. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've always been involved in engineering and just designing and building things all my life, and just being able to design things and learning how to do that through our high school has really enabled me to be able to print all these things and design all these things and understand all this technology. And I hope to go into Georgia Tech for civil engineering or structural engineering, some kind of engineering. But yeah, it's all that engineering background has really helped me to design all these products and be able to print them.
Yeah, Matt actually is the news director for Lawrence Technological University in the greater Detroit area. So
yeah, that's the it's a small private university. The two biggest programs are engineering and architecture. And in fact, we have a combined 5-year bachelor master's program in architectural engineering that's growing pretty rapidly.
Oh, wow. I was not aware of that.
Well, I might just send you some information on that. Make my boss
very good. Please do. I was going to introduce Dalton saying he's a junior, but we just don't know nowadays. I mean, school's been canceled, so he's either a junior or a senior. We're not sure where he falls right now.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah. And we're the same way. We converted all of our classes to online classes using Zoom, which was part of our Canvas software for students, the online learning software. And after spring break, we came back from spring break and moved almost 800 classes online. So it's been a real challenge.
Wow. Incredible.
Yeah.
All right. So let's. We only got a couple minutes left here. So why don't we give those website addresses where folks can reach out to you guys and pick your brains or get your designs or order some product or whatever they want.
Or make a donation.
Yes, please.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah.
So a couple different ways. www.derbocity.com. Or you can go to Facebook and do the @ Derbocity, and that should find us. And through the one of those, you should be able to drill down into the donation page. And I don't have that address memorized. I'm not that good. So unfortunately, but we look forward
here
to
the talking points. It says here in the talking points, it's corporate@derbocity.com.
Yes. Thank you for the email. corporate@derbocity.com. Thank you very much.
Right.
But yeah, reach out to us, and we're looking for anybody that wants to help, assist, donate, or otherwise. And most importantly, if you need something from us that we can send out to you, please get a hold of us.
All right. Well, that's a very nice gesture on your part.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you for having us on here.
Well, you're welcome. We'll get you that. We're live now, but we'll get you that on-demand video here that you can use on your website once we're done. So,
thank you so very much.
All right. Thanks, guys. We'll be right back with another segment of our virtual MI Tech TV show. This is Mike Brennan.
And it's Matt Roush.
And you're watching MI Tech TV.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU 5th among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University is all about opportunities. You learn beyond the campus, doing real-world research for top companies and honing your skills through co-ops and internships. Apply what you learn. Be challenged. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
What do you get at Lawrence Technological University? As a Lawrence Tech...
Are we live? There we go. Hey, you know, live TV.
The fun of live TV and radio and podcasting. Yes, indeed.
You never know. So we have... How do you pronounce your last name, Gene?
Paranak.
Paranak. Okay. And I just met him last week, although we had met previously at one of these Mish Bio functions. But he has... every Friday, you have this impromptu Zoom meeting with all these various PPE medical supply folks. And I listened in for, well, it was a little, about 90 minutes, I guess. And everybody talks about what their needs are, and they talk about what they can provide. And when did this all start? When did you start doing this?
Yeah, Mike. Well, like so many companies, at Into Being, we thought, well, you know, we work in products and we work in medical devices. We should be able to help somehow. And so we really made an effort to try to, first of all, we were going to work on masks. And we, some of our team did a phenomenal job, and we delivered a few hundred masks within a very short amount of time to a local hospital. And that was great. But we started to realize that we were running into material supply issues. And we started to hear anecdotes from other people saying, well, I could do this, but either I don't understand what FDA is actually saying, or I don't understand what, where to get the materials I need or the testing that I need. And we thought to ourselves, well, this is what we do on a daily basis anyways, is direct traffic for a medical device development, which is the same thing, but at maybe a larger scale. And we thought, well, we could serve as an aggregator. And that's kind of where the brainchild came for that.
All right. And so you've been doing it for how many weeks now?
It's been about 3 weeks. We've had four shows. The fifth show will be this Friday at 2 p.m.
Now, is this something that anybody can sort of come into on, or by invite only, or how do you run it?
Anybody can come in. We are so thankful to the many groups who came together to make it happen the first time. We had folks from MishBio and the University of Michigan, MEDC, Keystone Product Development on the west side of the state. We had folks from Spectrum Health, independent docs over here on the east side. We just had everybody coming together to get the message out to convene the community. And so it's open to anybody. We give an open forum during the meeting for folks to make themselves known. So if they're part of a manufacturer or a material supplier or a test house, or their docs that want to report in on what's happening, health systems that have needs, as well as conveners, folks that are making lists and getting people put together. We give them all time to talk about those things, in addition to talking about the latest news on the response front, as well as really the core of it is unpacking the FDA's emergency use authorizations so that teams have an understanding of how they can really take practical steps to deliver something. Because some of the most frequent questions are, we're working on masks or we're working on ventilators or something, and we don't really understand what we're being told that we can and can't do. So we like to get hands-on with that with folks.
Yeah, those emergency regs are letting people get away with a lot of stuff that in normal times they would not be able to do, right?
It's true, although I think the most common misperception is that somehow the FDA has just taken the reins off, when in reality what they've done is they've let go of some very specific things, but they've retained in place a lot of other very specific things. As always, FDA is concerned with what you say your product is or what it does. None of that has changed. And in fact, many of the labeling regulations are still very much in place, and they've gotten a little bit more specific about them. So while there are certain design control activities and other good manufacturing practices that they, in many cases, are waiving, it really starts with the labeling requirements. What are you saying this is good for? So we've had a lot of teams that say, oh, I've got the greatest thing, and it's this antibacterial thing that's going to help with COVID. But in fact, FDA is saying, let's not make claims about that. Let's just be very, very basic and say, this is what we're giving. This is what it does. This is what we're not claiming that it does. So getting down to brass tacks on that can be really helpful for teams.
So is the essence of your effort more, it's more medical device related, right, than pharma related? Or is it both?
It's definitely, yeah, it's a great question. It's definitely medical device related, although we're trying to touch on the diagnostic EUAs that are coming out there. There's at last count, I think, about 40 diagnostic emergency use authorizations. A couple of us from our team really have a background in automated molecular diagnostics. And so it's natural for us to go into that, but that's a big area that's happening really fast. So diagnostic folks are definitely welcome to engage and contribute, and we'll try to make those connections. One of the connections that the diagnostic folks often need and want is to be connected to folks who either have the bug that they can do testing on, or to other test houses that they can work with. So we've seen a lot of testing asks that are really critical to the effort.
Yeah, right now it seems like what everyone's looking for are the testing kits and the what's the antibody kits. And I was reading just today that there's 70 different companies or people or whatever organizations saying that they have these antibody kits that people can use to find out whether or not they've already had COVID. And if it turns out that they have, then in theory, I don't know whether that's going to actually happen, but in theory, they could go back out and go back to work and participate because they would essentially be immune. But I didn't hear a lot of that in the meeting on Monday. It was more the more fundamental stuff like masks. And there was the woman that called in from the Carolinas had the tube that could connect to a ventilator and would be used on two patients. But that was just only for the emergency. And then she had to reclaim all of those and destroy them after whenever the pandemic lets up, right? So it was a really
That's exactly right, Mike. I mean, a lot of this stuff is very much the EUAs generally say that they are for the duration of the public health emergency. So for folks who really want to help, this is a great opportunity for looking at it as, oh, we're going to put product out there. Some of the EUAs are saying you're going to have to pull that product back at the end of the public health emergency, whenever that comes. And on the diagnostic side, one of the things that we've seen, and this keeps coming up now in the news this week, and we'll talk about that this Friday, is a lot of these diagnostics have, we will see what the validation status of them is. How many false positives, how many false negatives, that's something that's not always clear on the surface. So I think that's going to be one of the next things you're going to be hearing about, and I'm sure we'll be talking about that Friday, is what is the validation status? Because every diagnostic has a false positive and false negative rate associated with it. And you hope that those are low, but in this case, while everything happening, it may not be clear yet.
So what was the genesis of this Friday group? How did you get this community together?
Well, that was not something that we did. That was really something that the community did. And we're so thankful to all our friends around the state for doing that. Some of the early folks who really sent the message out, and I hope I don't forget anybody in saying this, but it was late on a Thursday night, I think, that we were getting the first one together. And then we had like 230 people show up the next day or the day after. It was just incredible. I know that Stephen Rapundolo and Alicia from Mish Bio sent out a big email blast that made a big dent. I know that the folks over at U of M, especially Tech Transfer, Kelly Sexton was instrumental. She was the first open forum participant telling us about some of their efforts in aggregating people together. I know the folks over at FFMI sent stuff out. People over at Spectrum Health really got in on that first blast. The folks at Ann Arbor Spark and at the MedHealth cluster coming out of TechTown were instrumental in getting some of that initial word out. Jim Metzger over at Keystone Product Development went out to his list. Our friends over at Public Sector Consultants sent it around to others. I hope doing that from memory, it's probably somebody I missed there. But we had been talking a lot with Kalyan Handik and Priyadarshini Gogoi, who are with Celsi, although we just heard this week all in the news that Celsi just got bought by Bio-Rad. So congratulations. They were instrumental in bringing some of the first awareness that there were going to be some of these shortages to us. And so we had been talking with them a lot early. And so they were instrumental in getting that out. But just so many people responded. So Into Being doesn't have that kind of convening ability. But the community just came together and said, yep, we need to have this discussion. And we're just privileged to be in a position to facilitate it.
Why don't you talk a little bit about Into Being? I'll give you that chance to plug your own company here as well. How'd you guys start? What specifically? I know it's a medical device area, but I'm not totally clear on what it is.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Well, so Into Being is now just a little bit over 10 years old. Myself and my colleague Aaron Carer with a bunch of local startups. Most notably, we were both with Handylab, and then he was with Accuray Cytometers. And we've got a team that consists of product development experts. And what we do is we work with new product development efforts on the actual design controls, the hands-on design readiness for design for manufacturability, as well as on the regulatory submissions, including pre-submissions and 510K submissions. So our bread and butter is doing medical device development for new product development efforts with everything from startups, independent inventors, to now mid to large sized companies that are working on their new product lines. And so it put us in a great position to say, you know, what we do every day is we work with regulations and actually implementing them down at the level of hands-on stuff. Why don't we start talking about emergency use authorizations? So I think that was a nice link between what we do on a daily basis and the current need.
Okay.
All right. So what do you think of the highlights so far of this effort?
Well, I think the biggest highlight is just to see the whole community coming together. It's been really neat to see how MEDC has been bringing everyone together and maintaining a master database. And so many little efforts have been feeding into that. So I give them a lot of credit for doing that. And that's been really cool to see. People have been coming together and largely, I would say 95%, there's no self-interest. A lot of times it's just, I'm going to spend the time on the phone and I'm just going to do it. And that I think has been overwhelming to see so many people just coming out of the woodwork there'll always be one or two who are like, they want to make a buck off of it. But that is just by and large not what I'm seeing on a daily basis on the phone late at night with folks. It's just not what I'm seeing. So that's been exciting. And I think, you know, in terms of the show on Fridays, it's been fun. We had Sundaresh Ramasandra, old friend of mine, with Pneumatix, with their emergency use authorization. He came on and told us about that. We had a rep from Celex with their diagnostic. Like you mentioned, Mike, Marjorie was on from the group in South Carolina that did the Vesper connector. And so we've just had a lot of cool things, a lot of big companies that, if I put the names out there, that are trying to help with the effort, have been on the call. Some have made themselves known, some haven't, but some incredibly large companies that are looking to contribute resources, help with manufacturing, have been a part of that. And so, there's really just been a lot of interest and a lot of connection happening. We've had material suppliers connecting with folks who can build stuff. Just got an email. We got a local hospital system in touch with somebody who can make gowns for them. They had no way of getting in touch with, and that connection got me. And so I think we're just really excited about those connections that are happening and the level of disinterested public service that people are investing into this.
Unfortunately, we're out of time in this segment. Why don't you give that address where folks can find out more if they want to participate in the Friday calls?
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, it's intobeing.com/COVID Connect, intobeing.com/COVID Connect.
And that's every Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern time, right?
Every Friday at 2 p.m. Eastern time, and we usually run for about an hour and a half.
Okay. Well, thanks very much, Gene Perenek from Into Being. This is a worthy effort these days. Best of luck to you, and congratulations.
Matt and Mike, thank you both so much. Really appreciate having me on.
All right. Thanks very much. We'll be right back with the prophet of doom, Fred Brown, who will talk about what the latest is on the COVID.
Okay. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you're watching at mitechnews.tv.
As a Lawrence Technological University graduate, you're not only marketable, you're worth more. Yes, more. According to payscale.com, when it comes to graduate salaries, LTU is in America's top 100. Be invaluable. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Lawrence Technological University graduates earn a degree and a higher starting salary. In fact, when it comes to earning potential, the Brookings Institution ranks LTU fifth among U.S. colleges and universities. Be enriched. Be more. At LTU, possible is everything.
Salaries of Lawrence Tech grads are among the highest of any university in America. Plan a campus visit to meet with counselors, faculty, and coaches. Why wait? Find out more at ltu.edu.
Well, I'll talk to you after the show about how to do that. So.
Perfect. Hey, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And we're back with another segment of the M Squared TechCast at mitechnews.tv.
And we have returning, dun, 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 Fred Brown. We used to say that about our cybersecurity guys that would come on and scare everybody, but Fred, I think, has trumped them, you know. So
yeah, this is a physical threat is worse than cyber threat, definitely.
Yes, yes. So one of the things that Fred wants to talk about is, and I've been hearing a lot, just I think it was yesterday I was reading, there are 70 companies that claim they have some sort of antibody test that is really important right now because it'll determine if you have had COVID and you're over COVID. Meaning, in theory, you can go back onto your job or mingle or what do they call it? The herd immunity or whatever it's right. called.
Yes. Yes. So that's right. That's one of my areas. Actually, I know quite a bit about because I was I at one point was an executive at the world's leading manufacturer of monoclonal antibodies. So the idea is that when your body gets attacked, it produces antibodies. And these antibodies are actually permanent records of the fact you've been attacked. And they're specific just for that disease you've got. So what's nice about that is if you can detect the antibody, then you can know whether you've ever been exposed and had a reaction to the disease. And chances are, if you've been exposed and have had a reaction to the disease, you'll be able to fend it off much better. And so that's what they call herd immunity. If you've got enough of the herd safe and filled with antibodies, then even if a sick person comes in or a sick part of the herd comes in, they can't spread it anywhere because everyone else around them is immune.
Yeah, that would really be nice. I think the biggest issue right now is it's you can't get your arms around with the situation until you test people to know whether they have it or whether they have had it. And we don't know any of those answers. I mean, what, 5% of the people might have been tested at this point?
Oh, less
more like 1%, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sadly, it's even less than that. Actually, it's been about 2.2, I believe, million people so far have been tested. It's luckily it's growing fast, which is great. And not all that's not only the antibody test that mixes in with it something called the polymerase chain reaction test, the PCR test, and that actually determines just whether you've had whether you have the disease that's actively shedding the viral pieces. So you've got two different tests. One is to say I've got the virus. And the other one is to say, I've had the virus and survived. And then that monoclonal antibody says, I've had this virus and I've survived. And the PCR test says, I've got the virus active in me. Sometimes you know it because you have symptoms. But about half the time or so, we think people don't even know it.
Now, I know the vaccine is still a long ways off. But what I don't understand is, and maybe it's just because the scale of the problem is so large, is why we don't have these tests. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of very large companies out there that could really be focused on this. And, you know, obviously they're not going to give them away. I mean, I don't think they're going to stop war profiteering or anything. But essentially, I mean, they would be compensated for their costs. But is it just take a long time to spool this up or what?
Yeah. So the PCR test doesn't take so long. What happened was on January 10th, China released the genetic code for the virus. So they knew they had the virus, they isolated it, and then they did all sorts of work with it, and they realized this is the genome of the virus. And they released that to everybody. And they said, here's the genetic code. At that point, we could actually start to work on tests. Until January 10th, because it's a brand new disease, we couldn't do anything. After January 10th, that's when the clock started. And we've done pretty well. The PCR tests came out relatively quickly. Unfortunately, we had a hiccup with them in February, and so they got stopped. And that prevented us from understanding who actually had the disease. The monoclonal antibody test, the first one came out about a week ago, was approved. I think on April 1st it was approved. It's an Abbott test. It's called a rapid test. And there, the issue is you actually have to produce the antigen so that you can detect the antibody. The antibody has to go into the test and it has to actually attach itself. And then a signal is released and you say, aha, the antibody's there. So you've got to actually create this antigen and then put the blood in it and it reacts. Well, creating the antigen at high scale is challenging. So Abbott right now has the ability to produce about 100,000 of these machines every day. And these machines can test, each machine can test about 475 samples in a day. So that's pretty quick. And we should be getting a lot more results now that they're coming out. But unfortunately, it's not nearly enough. We are under capacity by a lot because it's a brand new disease. The PCR test, we had something much more early, but it's slow. The Abbott test takes between 5 minutes if you're positive and 15 minutes if you're negative for the antibodies. The PCR test, when it's unautomated like we had, which was brand new, it can take a good lab technician can take about 6-7 hours just to understand whether you got it. So you can imagine the backup when you got hundreds of tests coming in at you with brand new disease and you're trying to, you know, pipette and mix reagents that you're not familiar with and all that. That takes a long time. And we only have about 168 of those machines in the whole United States.
Wow.
So that's what caught us.
Now, they just announced late last week and starting this week that in Michigan here, we're going to have 13 drive-through testing facilities. Get them listed. It was in my newsletter this morning, and it's on my website for people wanting locations, but it's most of the major big cities. We don't have one here in Ann Arbor, but there's one in Jackson and one in Detroit, and then scattered around the rest of the state. So that will be somewhat helpful, right?
Oh, absolutely. The drive-through test is just what you want to do. You want to call your doctor so that you're on the list. You get on a then the doctor can get your results, explain them to you, and talk to you about various, interventions and treatments, and what you should do next. And so it's important to kind of follow your doctor first, get the okay, move through go into the line, get your test done. If you can, I would avoid sitting there. If you think you're sick and you don't think the rest of your family is sick, don't bring the rest of your family with you to get sick in the car. If there's a long wait, they'll all get sick with you and catch the disease. So, stay by yourself and make sure that the test is done, that the swab really goes into your nose. I know it's uncomfortable, and the swab really goes down your throat, because the biggest problem with the PCR test, it's very, very precise. But if the swab misses the disease, it can come up negative and you'll be positive, and you'll actually be positive, which means you'll go out there thinking you're all fine and you'll infect everybody. So make sure they give them a chance to really get in there, because it turns out that our leading swab manufacturer in the world, the gold standard for swab manufacturing for this particular test, is located in Lombardy, Italy, which had a death rate that was 10% of the people there died of this. 10% of the people who were infected died of it. It was just a terrible situation. And unfortunately, that whole manufacturing facility has been shut down. So we're using not quite as good swabs to give you these tests. If you're doing a monoclonal antibody test and you just have to give a finger prick and move on, I'm not sure which tests are available at the testing centers.
All right.
So do we know whether once you've had it, you are immune? I know there have been some reports coming out of China of people testing positive for the active disease again after they recovered from it.
Yes. So that's a great point. And it's a really important question to get answered. And we're trying to work on that. So there are different kinds of antibodies that are responding. There's a special kind of antibody called a neutralizing antibody. That's the ones you really want to focus on, because a neutralizing antibody actually do kill the virus. The other antibodies are there to signal and to bring other killer antibodies in, but they don't actually do anything except to signal your own body. So if you are positive, then the nice thing about that is if you give blood and you have the right titers, you can save other people's lives. So go to your blood bank, donate your blood to the extent you can, and they can use that then to protect people who are fighting the fight, the nurses, and they can also improve the opportunity for some people who are dying to perhaps live. So I didn't answer your question, though. What was your repeat for me? I only answered.
Are we sure that having had this and having those antibodies does confer immunity?
Yes. So So this is a coronavirus. It's a brand new virus. So the answer is we don't know yet. We think so because it's in a family of viruses called called coronaviruses. So there are seven different kinds, and there's the sniffles. There's four of those are cold types of coronaviruses. Then you've got SARS, which killed a lot of people, sadly, and MERS and a few others. So those are the coronaviruses, and we know from our experience that coronaviruses, once you get them once, you do have a slight immunity, and that immunity tends to last between 8 and 18 months, depending on. It's only been 4 months we have it, so we don't really know the answer to the question yet, how long it'll last, how effective it's going to be. Those questions we don't know. One thing, I was going to say one more thing, but I can't remember what I'm sorry, Matt. Go ahead, one more time.
Well, because I know that there are some viruses that, you have them once and then that's it. There are some viruses that can come back in a slightly different form, like chickenpox comes back as shingles, right?
Yes. So. You asked about the Chinese results. That's true. They got it once, and they came back and got it again. And there are two theories to that. First, you didn't have immunity. So in other words, you had a little bit of a response, but it wasn't enough to get enough neutralizing antibodies going. So that wasn't quite enough. You have to get infected again, sadly. The other and more probable cause is that what happens to the coronavirus is that it runs away. It realizes, oh my God, I'm getting attacked by the immune system. And then it runs into different parts of your body. So it might, they call it sequestering. So it might sequester itself in the lymph system or some other area. And then when you're sort of tired out, not physically fit, haven't had your vegetables, it comes back, with a roar. And so that's what we think happened in those cases in China.
Okay.
All right, so we got about 2 minutes left, and I just got a text from Dave saying he definitely has to wrap at 3. So let's just address this last issue. Everybody's thinking that we're going to have summer and fall sports where we get hundreds of people or thousands of people together or tens of thousands. And I know we've talked about this before, but we need to let people know that this is probably not going to be when it's going to happen, right?
No, in fact, I don't think we can control it well enough. We went through the example of, you know, what happens if you could test everybody going into the stadium with a thermal scan. That's another kind of test that kind of tells you whether you've got a temperature or not. And we, you know, we did the math, and it would take us, you know, 5 days to load the stadium up. If you, so it's and we open up all the
food vendors would go.
Well, there, I was going to say there are some people who enjoy a good tailgate, but 5 days is a pretty long tailgate.
It's a long tailgate.
So that's going to be a challenge. So what Major League Baseball is talking about is sort of interesting. They're saying, look, we can protect our players, get them all figured out and whether they have the disease or not. And they can play all down in Arizona. So they'll be down in Arizona. You can watch them on TV. You know, they'll all be there together playing and practicing, which is great. And then you'll be able to watch them on TV. We won't be able to come into the stadium. You just still have to have huge separation.
Well, that would be more fun to watch than the 30-year-old NASCAR races that Fox is putting on TV right now.
That's right. At least it's something new. Yeah. and who knows? It might even improve the. Well, I shouldn't say it. But yeah. So I think so that I know Major League Baseball is thinking about that. I'm going to be talking with someone who can tell me more about that tonight. Actually, he runs the San Francisco Giants. So
unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it at that, Fred. We're fast approaching 3 o'clock. If folks want to reach out to you, give them your email address again.
So I have an email address just for COVID now because people are starting to ask me a lot of questions, and which is absolutely fine. It's fred.brown.covid@gmail.com.
All right.
Okay, want to thank Fred Brown, thank all of our guests today, the financier Bob Moore, the father and son team working on 3D printing, Darren and Dalton Luke, working on 3D printing protective gear for our first responders and frontline health care workers, and Gene Perinac from Into Being, convening a weekly session on how Michigan medical device companies can help. Be back here at 2 o'clock Eastern Time next Monday. For right now, it's Matt Rausch.
And Mike Brennan.
And you've been watching the M-Squared TechCast at mitechnews.tv.
Thanks for listening to M-Squared TechCast, a live internet radio show offering the latest news and interviews with the people driving business, technology, and politics in Michigan. Join your hosts, Matt Rausch and Mike Brennan, next Monday at 3 p.m. If you can't listen live, audio podcasts of the show can be found at podcastdetroit.com.
I just want to live in a world where Halloween's going to be a thing again.